One of my favorite activities in the world of Lima Torah is to take a topic that we've all been familiar with from an early age. So think about the biblical narrative. That's something that we all know about, have learned about, have been raised on. And to think about that same narrative in a slightly either deeper, slightly more resonant way, instead of just almost like spouting forth the narrative, to really think about it very, very deeply, and to do so through the prism of the Rishonim. Yesterday we learned, or we read once again, Parshas Chukas, and the story of the Mei Meriva. And while we're all familiar with the story, and probably many of us can even sort of think about the images of our youth associated with the story of the Mei Meriva, I want to, as I said before, just go a little bit deeper, and at least for me, maybe slightly more personally resonant, psychologically resonant, more so than we often give credence to or time for, more so than we normally explore. So the basic question that all Rishonim deal with, and when I say all Rishonim, I literally mean all Rishonim. This is a topic that has been discussed thoroughly in the Rishonim. The only consensus is that there is no consensus. So many different shitas in Rishonim, so many people disagreeing with each other. Every person has a bevy of kashas and questions against Rishonim that came before then. And, you know, this debate has been going on for thousands of years. Namely, what exactly was the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's chait? And what is, I wouldn't say shocking, but what is significant is both specifically by Moshe Rabbeinu's chait here in Parshas Chukas, as well as Klai Yisrael's chait and the Meraglim's chait in Parshas Shlach, is that the Torah does not lay out exactly what happened. And in a way that's surprising, because if these monumental events occur, whether again it's the chait of Meraglim or it's the chait of the Mei Meriva, monumental events that would change the course of history, whether it's the future of Klai Yisrael, the future of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, so you would think that it would be absolutely clear what exactly happened. The fact that it's not, itself is informative. Itself is paints a more nuanced and complex picture than simply action and response, chait and onesh. And the question, of course, that all the Rishonim, as I said, debate is what was the nature of the chait? And the question that is not as widely discussed, and something that might be even more important, is why would that chait, whatever that chait is, then animate and lead to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu could not enter into the land of Israel? 40 years in the Midbar, all of these years of leadership, all of the Agmas Nefesh, the complete identification of Moshe Rabbeinu with the nation, after all that period of time, now chait, they were not even sure exactly what it was, now all of a sudden that created a reality where Moshe Rabbeinu can no longer, lo saviu, can no longer be the person to bring in Bnei Yisrael, and that's really the shocking part. Not exactly what the chait is, but why should that chait be something that now demands that there needs to be a change of leadership? And that's something that I'd like to talk about over the course of the next few minutes. Now, everyone's familiar with the Pesukim, but let me just sort of go back and either highlight or focus on the few key Pesukim. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemur Kachas HaMateh. Take the staff in your hand. V'hakel ha'eda, gather together the eda atav yaharon achicha, you and your brother. V'dibartem el hasela le'inehem, speak to the rock in front of their eyes. V'nasan meimav, and you will bring forward, the rock will bring forward water. V'hotzeisa lahem mayim min hasela v'hishkisa se'eda v'esbiram. So you will now be able to feed the people, you'll be able to feed their animals. But yigach Moshe es hamatem lufnei Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu took the mateh, ka'asher tzivahu, like he was commanded. Vayakilu Moshe v'Aharon es hakahal el pnei hasala. And they gathered together the people in front of the rock. Vayomer lahem. And he says, Shimu nahamorim, listen to me, you rebellious ones, or listen, you rebellious ones. Hamin hasela hazen notzi locha mayim. It's not clear whether this is being said as a statement or as a question. He said, we will bring forward, or can we bring forward, water from this rock? Vayar Moshe siyado vayaches hasela b'mateyu pamayim. Moshe lifts his hand and he hits the rock two times. Vayetsu mayim rabim vatesh ta'eda b'iram. Water came forward. The water was plentiful. It was enough to quench the thirst of the Edom and of the animals. Vayomer Shema Moshe v'yal Aharon, Ya'an lo hemantim b'lahakdisheni. One of the most significant, tragic psukim in the entire Torah, because you did not have emuna in me to be mekadesh me, to sanctify me, le'inei b'nei Yisrael, lochein lo saviu es hakahal hazeh el ha'aretz, Asher nasati lohem. Therefore, you cannot bring this kahal, you cannot bring this congregation to the land of Israel. And then the Torah concludes in the last pasuk, Hema me meriva. These are the waters of conflict. Asher ravu v'nei Yisrael es Hashem, with which v'nei Yisrael had a conflict with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, v'yikadesh bam. And through these waters, there was a sanctification. Namely, Bikravaya Kadesh, like we have by Nadav Avihu, that God sort of sanctified himself through the waters, almost like through the death, Moshe and Aaron. There was some form of Kiddush Hashem, which again, of course, is a complicated topic, either sanctification, a recognition of God. Something was happening here that we call Vayikadesh Bam, that through them we were sanctified. So I want to mention five different shitas brought down in the Rishonim and in the Acharonim. There's really many more. But these five positions represent very different perspectives on the nature of this chait. Now, the first shita, and clearly the most famous, the shita which probably if we scan through our minds of the little Medrash says, and the Medrash says, and the family Medrash says, and all the other images that we have of Moshe Rabbeinu standing at the Meimariva, typically we're going to think about the position of Rashi, namely that Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock. He was told to speak to the rock. Instead, he hit the rock. And presumably, when we see the pasuk Ya'an lo hemantim b'lahakdisheni, you didn't have enough belief in me to allow for Kiddush Hashem. Namely, if you had just spoken to the rock, there would have been a far greater glorification of the name of God. By hitting the rock in a way, it's almost bringing a physical act. It might seem less miraculous. That might be a reflection of a lack of emuna, that Moshe Rabbeinu at that moment didn't believe that speaking to the rock would be enough, and therefore an action was mandated. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that lack of emuna, you now have to enter into the land of Israel. And again, I would ask the question I did before. Even if that were to be the case, why would this be an action? Why would this be an oversight, so to speak, after all of the credit that Moshe Rabbeinu built up, to now say that Moshe Rabbeinu cannot enter into the land of Israel? Now, the Ramban sort of takes issue with everybody, as the Ramban often does. The Ramban was living in the middle of the 13th century, so he's living after the time of Rashi, after the time of the Rambam, after the time of the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban is sort of able to almost like sit on his perch in Spain and purview and look at all the other shitos and point out the flaws in those shitos. So he has a number of questions on Rashi. And one of the questions is that if, in fact, Moshe was not supposed to use the staff, if all he was supposed to do was speak to the rock, so then why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu command him to take the staff. Clearly taking the staff means that he was also supposed to use the staff as well. Maybe speak also to the rock, but certainly use the staff. And therefore, that can't be the problem with Moshe Rabbeinu's behavior. The problem must have been something else. So what was that problem according to the Ramban? A completely different shita, namely that Moshe Rabbeinu had said, min hatzela notzi, right? Can we take water, or we can take water from this notzi l'chamayim, from this rock? The implication somehow was that Moshe Rabbeinu or Aaron HaKohen collectively were the ones who were bringing forth water from the rock. And of course, that was not true. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu lost the opportunity, so to speak, to be Mekadeshim Shemayim, saying that we can't do anything. We're simply here as a kli, but let's sit and watch as HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the water from the rock. And the lack of ability to do that, or the inability to do that, or failing to do that, is what brought about the onesh of Moshe Rabbeinu not being able to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Now, what is striking is that Moshe Rabbeinu had done this on many, many occasions before. He says, it's not in my hands to do it. His yatzvu or u es yeshuas Hashem, let's stand back over here and watch the glory of God. Meaning, it's not as though Moshe Rabbeinu always violated this precept, but in this case he did. And again, this was enough to animate a change of the future of Klal Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu now cannot be the person, lo saviyu, you cannot bring this nation into the land of Israel. A third sheet is that of the Abarbanel. Abarbanel, of course, when I say of course, because he almost always does, has a lengthy discussion on this topic. He goes through many of the positions, and he cites certain positions that we both mentioned here and that we didn't mention here. And the Abarbanel ends up with a tremendous, tremendous chiddush, namely the following. The Abarbanel said that the chait of Aharon and Moshe, which now determined and dictated that they could not enter into the land of Israel, actually was not Mei Meriva. Mei Meriva also happened. There was also a mistake of judgment by Mei Meriva, but the real chait took place 39 years beforehand. The real chait was A, Aaron HaKohen acquiescing or being involved in some way in the building of the chait ha'egel, of the egel, and Moshe Rabbeinu's acquiescence, or maybe even desire, to send in Meraglim to the land of Israel. It was those chatayim which now determined their fate for the future. The Mei Meriva, maybe it was just the Makkah B'Patish, it was like the final blow. It was also a problem, but the real, real essence of the chait, or the chatayim, took place 39 years beforehand. Now, a person could very easily, and by the way, the one reason that this makes sense, among other reasons as well, is that the Rabbeinu B'chai points out that what exactly did Aaron HaKohen do wrong in this case? It was Moshe Rabbeinu who hit the rock. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who says, notzi, let's take out the water. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who got upset at Klal Yisrael. Like, what was Aaron's place in that? So maybe then that gives certain credence to the sheet of the Abarbanel that no, this was not the source of the chait. The source of the chait was earlier. Now, the problem with saying that is manifold. One problem is that if the chait, in fact, was 39 years beforehand, why is it only being revealed now? Seems to be unusual, right? Every other situation we've had before, so the chait and the onesh, and the response, were mentioned side by side. Why would this only be 39 years afterwards, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is informing Moshe Rabbeinu that they cannot be the ones to bring Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael? And secondly, I gave a shiur on this topic yesterday on Shabbos, and a woman pointed out that the pasuk of Yan lo hemantim bi lahagdisheni, you failed to have faith in me to be mekadesh le'nei b'nei Yisrael, That seems to be talking about something that just happened. The implication is that there was an aveira that took place now, which indicated a lack of emunah, a lack of the ability of being mekadesh Shem Hashem, right? So basically, the Abarbanel is saying that this pasuk is going back on Chet Egel, it's going back on Chet Meraglim, that definitely is not the pashtos of the way that the Chumash certainly reads. Okay, so that's the third shita, that the Chet was retroactive. A fourth shita, and again, definitely not the pashtos, but is espoused by the great Chiddush Yerim, the first Ger Rebbe. The Chiddush Yerim said that the problem is, as it relates to the words le'enehem, bring forth the water in front of their eyes. And also then again, le'enei b'nei Yisrael, in front of the eyes of b'nei Yisrael. And the problem was not in the hitting of the rock, or not in saying the word notzi, not in anything else, but that Moshe Rabbeinu in some way lost out on the opportunity of doing this in a public way. Yes, it does say that he gathered together the Jews, but you know, maybe he didn't do it le'enehem in front of everyone. He didn't do it in such a way that concretized and fortified the Amun of Klal Yisrael. This could have been a great opportunity, just like Kriyas Yamsuf, that people could have walked away le'enehem in front of them with complete clarity, complete understanding, complete definitive knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that. Maybe he didn't wait until they were all gathered around. Maybe he did it with his back turned towards them. But he lost that opportunity of le'enehem, of fortifying the faith of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, it was that he was punished for. And this actually raises an interesting question about the nature of Emuna. I mean, this Chiddush Yerim said that there's a value, and this sort of works and dovetails with the Shitas Ramban, at the end of Parshas Bo, there's a value, there's a necessity of an absolute clarity of faith, of a Neitz Nigla in the language of the Ramban. And that clarity of faith is what allows for Nisim Nistarim, for people to realize that everything is providential. Everything comes from divine providence. But there's the need of establishing something le'enehem, that clarity of God's existence and Hashkacha, so that we can believe that everything is B'yad Hashem. And this Kiddush Erim sort of is of the same theme as that Shitas Ramban. Now, the last Shita that I want to mention is the Shitas Rambam. The Rambam says, and for those of you who are interested in finding the source, this is the Rambam at Shmona Prakim, which is a treatise on ethics that is found as an introduction to Pirkei Avos. It's a very, very significant treatise. It dovetails with a lot of what he writes in Hilchos Deos, which is found in the Mishneh Torah, in Sefer Mada. And there he speaks about the fact that the real chait was that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry at Klal Yisrael. Shimu na hamorim, listen to us, listen you rebellious ones. And that expression of anger, almost an expression of rage, that was the real chait. And the Rambam said that part and parcel of that was that there was no reason to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was actually angry at Klal Yisrael. Maybe the request of Klal Yisrael, when they felt they were going to be, you know, starving or not being able to drink, maybe that was appropriate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not angry at all. But Moshe Rabbeinu conveyed the feeling of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger to Klal Yisrael, and gave them the impression HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry. And it was that, the getting angry and making Bnei Yisrael felt they did something wrong, that sin of ka'as is so significant, it is so detrimental, that just that by itself, said the Rambam, was enough to now steer Moshe Rabbeinu away from his position of leadership and to have that leadership stripped from him. So five positions: Rashi, hitting the rock; the Ramban, Notzi; the Barbanel, the Chait was not here, but it was retroactive to 39 years beforehand; the Chiddush Yerim, the issue was Le'enehem; and the very famous Shitas of the Rambam, Shita of the Rambam, Shimu na hamorim, it was getting angry. Now, I thought to say, and I never saw anybody mention this, is that in a way, Moshe Rabbeinu lo saviyu, not being able to bring Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, it's not an onesh per se. Moshe Rabbeinu did A, and therefore the onesh is B. Right? Because if that would be the case, it doesn't seem as though the punishment meets the crime or matches the crime. For any one of these five opinions about what Moshe Rabbeinu did, it stretches the believability that any of these things warranted an onesh so severe of Moshe Rabbeinu not being able to fulfill the destiny and the role that he had been in for so many years. Perhaps you could say that, but to me, what feels more logical is that all of these things, the anger, the frustration, the statement of the note C, that we're going to do this, which is probably born out of certain frustration or maybe a lack of patience, the hitting of the rock, indicated perhaps a leader who is maybe at the end of his rope in a way, right? And I don't want to speak of Moshe Rabbeinu in very human terms, but that's in a way what the Rishonim do. And that these behaviors, it's not so much that the punishment was that he could not bring Klai Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, but it was just sort of a natural outgrowth. It was like a giloy, so to speak, of perhaps the fact that there was a necessity for a change of leadership. That there's a point with every leader where there's a level of frustration, anger, annoyance, exasperation, etc., where there's a recognition that there's a need for a change, there's a need for a different voice, and not so much the fact that this was the own Eshe Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather there's a recognition that maybe a new voice, a new leadership is needed. And that may be borne out also by the fact that because of what Moshe Rabbeinu did, Lochein lo saviu es hakahal hazeh el ha'aretz asher nasati lehem. The focus is not that you, Moshe Rabbeinu yourself, you can't come into Eretz Yisrael, but there's a recognition of a need for a new person to be mevi es hakahal, to bring the kahal into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And maybe that's what is being expressed here in the psukim. I want to spend a few minutes, just the next 15 minutes or so, addressing this Shitas HaRambam. Now, the Rambam says, Shimunah HaMorim. And as I said before, the Ramban never has an issue speaking his mind when it comes to Rashi, the Ben Ezra, and the Rambam. And in fact, in this case, the Ramban quotes the Shitas HaRambam, and he says that he is Mosif Hevel Al Havalim, which is not something I could ever say about the Rambam or the Ramban or really about anybody else, which means that he is adding one nothingness to another nothingness. Namely, he's speaking foolishness, and it's a very critical statement. The Ramban had the greatest adulation for the Rambam, but when it came to Torah, when it came to the MS, there was no, you know, sort of beating around the bush, right? You had something to say and you said it, and sometimes you said it very sharply. So the Ramban said about the Rambam, who Mosif Hevel al Havalim. He's like, he's just adding one stupidity, one nothingness, one blankness on top of another thing. And again, it's incredibly, incredibly strong language. And for those of you who know the writings of the Rambam, you know that the Rambam himself was no stranger to strong language. The Ravid was no stranger to strong language on the Rambam. People sort of said their piece, and as actually my wife pointed out yesterday when I mentioned to her the Shita of the Ramban, she said they knew that it wasn't personal. And there's something very nice about that. So knowing that's not personal, we can just sort of speak emes lamito, obviously appropriately, but sometimes with passion. And that's obviously the way the Rishonim communicated, as did the Tanayim and the Marayim as well. Now, what was the Ramban's problem with the Rambam? So let me mention four objections very quickly. The first, and I'm saying this in no specific order, was that we have a Mesorah from Chazal that Aaron HaKohen never got angry. And what the Rambam is saying is Shimunah HaMorim was the reason for the death of Moshe and Aaron, but we know that Aaron never got angry. So that can't be the case at all. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that the Pasuk says Yan Lohemantim Bit Lahagdisheni. It's because you didn't have belief in me to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And why is it, the Ramban essentially is asking, That's not getting angry. People get angry because they get angry, right? That's not a lack of emunah. It's not a lack of believing in God. That is a sort of like an emotional response to a situation that doesn't seem to fit the bill of Ya'an Lohimantim Bit Lahati Shendi. Problem number three is, how do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was angry at all? Shimu Nahamorim could be said very calmly. Listen, you rebellious ones. He could be speaking very matter-of-factly. How do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu even got angry? So that's another problem the Ramban has on the Rambam. And maybe most compelling is that we know that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry on many other occasions at Klal Yisrael, the Lashon of Vayiktzov, Vayiktzov El Ha'am in Parshas B'Shalach, by Yiktzov el Anche Hachayel, that we have in Parshas Matos, other places as well. So why would this be sort of sui generis? This would be so unique that it animated and dictated that Moshe Rabbeinu could not enter into the land of Israel because of this outburst of anger. This is not the first or last time that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. So in order to answer those questions, I want to take a few minutes to explore the topic of anger. This is obviously a topic which, first of all, is very nogeya, so to speak, very mityaches to many of us, myself certainly included. And it's something which there is an arichus about in Chazal, in the Midrashim, in the Rishonim. We know that Gemara says, Masechta Shabbos, Kol HaKoves, anybody who gets angry, Kilo Oved Avodah Zarah, and many other statements as well. Why is it that anger is almost enemy number one? It's spoken about in a way that no other midah, besides perhaps gaiva, but maybe anger even more so, is spoken about in all of Chazal. Kol HaKoves Kilo Oved Avodah Zarah. So what the Gemara itself says in Shabbos is that ka'as is the first leg of a horrible trajectory. A person gets angry and they rip their clothing out of anger, they break a plate out of anger, they do various things out of anger. One thing leads to another thing that leads to another thing. And in that state, a person is even capable of being oved avodah zarah. And to some degree, we understand that. Yeah, and you can replace avodah zarah shvichas damim. How many times do you read in a newspaper of a fight breaks out, an argument starts, which leads to something else, which leads to something else, and before you know it, someone's dead, right? Anger is something that is the beginning point of a horrible trajectory for any of our lives. The end point could be avodah zarah, and that's what the Gemara means, kol hakoves ke'ilu oved avodah zarah. Now, that's really not the pashtus of that statement, because what the way the Gemara explains is that ka'as itself is not avodah zarah, but ka'as can lead to avodah zarah. But the pashtus is that ka'as, anger itself, is some form. It's an avak. It's like a derivation, so to speak, of avodah zarah. And why should that be the case? So the Baal HaTanya presents the very famous position that a person, if they had true emunah, they had true belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Borei Olam, he was the Manig Olam, so that a person, if they deeply, deeply felt that down to their core, that would really eliminate anger. I'm going to get angry because I lost a job. I'm going to get angry because I'm disappointed by my children. I'm going to get angry that Ichveh, it's like fill in the blank. If I felt that this was the Ratzon Hashem, and I was exactly where I'm supposed to be in life, then, you know, it wouldn't be giving forth to anger. Maybe a frustration, a disappointment. We are only human beings. But anger, which is in a way uncontrolled, if we really had a deep sense of bitachon, we would not do that. And therefore, it makes a lot of sense why then anger is doma to avodah zarah. By you getting angry, you're rejecting the concept that God is the manhag olam, is the person who is running the world. And that's, of course, an answer to the Ramban's question of the Rambam, that yes, getting angry is a violation of Ya'an Lohemantim Bit L'Hagdisheni. You didn't have enough emunah in me. You demonstrated to Klal Yisrael that you did not have enough emunah in me. And the Maharal mentions in the Gur Aryeh, in the Gevuras Hashem, that how horrendous that chinuch is. Because the Maharal says, if Moshe Rabbeinu could have gone up with full faith and been calm and spoken calmly and spoken with a spirit of acceptance and spoken to the rock or hit the rock and however he was supposed to do, so the impact that would have had on Klal Yisrael. But here, the impact was just the opposite. He got angry, there was a lack of faith, there was a lack of simcha, the Maharal said, and that trickles down onto Klal Yisrael as well. So the lack of faith led to anger. That's something that Moshe Rabbeinu felt, and according to the Maharal, that was something that had a deep, deep impact onto Klal Yisrael as well. But I wanted to say another pshat, maybe similar to the Sbala Tanya, but another pshat is, why is it that anger is something that is dome to avodah zarah? One asks people to almost go inside of themselves, to explore in a deeply the psychology of anyone listening to the shiur, or almost in all situations where someone gets angry, what is going on internally within a person that leads to anger? If a person had to express a sentence, formulate a sentence that conveys what is happening in this tahalich, in this process of anger, what exactly is happening? So I believe what is happening is that there's a violation of a piece of self. What do I mean by that? A violation of the piece of self? A person's has their own self-image that has been hurt. A person has been insulted. A person's ego has been insulted. A person's expectations are not met. A person's fears are now being triggered. All of that is some violation of self. What I want, how I perceive myself, my expectations, how I want people to treat me, how I want certain relationships to go, all of that is, in a way, self, like run riot. Self, which is being sort of overindulgence in self, so to speak. And that overindulgence in self, that the result of that is anger, often very intense anger. And in a way, therefore, a person who gets angry, because it's a reflection of an overexpansion of self, anger itself is a reflection of some form, some avak of avodah zarah. Because in that moment, it's not about God, it's not about accepting God's will, it's about me and my needs, my expectations, my ego, what I'm not receiving. And that, of course, spurts and creates an anger, often very intense anger. That itself is like an inyan of avodah zarah. That's perhaps an answer to the Ran's question, yan lo himantim bilahakdisheni, right? That when a person becomes so wrapped up in themselves, so there's like by definition a lack of emunah. You're not focused on God or God's will or God's presence. You're focused on yourself. And in that, it's like being ensconced inside of like a burqa. You know, you're ensconced inside of your own Dalai Lama's of anger. There's no room for anyone else, anything else, and certainly not for God's presence in your life at that moment. Now, in a way, I believe this also answers another question of the Ramban onto the Rambam. There were other situations in which the Rambam got angry. By Yitzov, there's other situations as well. But perhaps what was different about this situation of anger, and not every situation of anger is accurate, is that when a person is in anger that is a reflection of self, so then it's very easy to distort the reality of what a person sees around them. If I'm very angry at my husband or my wife or my children, and they do something to me, or I'm disappointed by them, so then all of a sudden it is hard for me to have a real clarity of the truth. You always do this, and you never meet my needs, and you always insult me, and you always prioritize this over me. It's not true, right? My child is always this. or my child is X. It's often not true. It's the way that a person feels in the moment because of the circumstances of anger and because our sense of self has been violated. When a person is in that place where that sense of self has been violated, as I said before, we're completely wrapped up in self, and then we see the world in a way that's not true. We just see the world from that place of hurt, that place of frustration. When the Rambam, perhaps what he means is when Moshe Rabbeinu, again, Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the greatest of all human beings, but obviously fallible, when he said, Shimu Nahamorim, that is the reflection of a type of anger that distorts, right? It's the type of anger that's coming from that sense of self, of frustration, of disappointment, that distorts then the reality. Were Bnei Israel truly Hamorim, rebellious ones? No. Bnei Israel were wandering through the desert. They were Ochlei Man. Many of these people were people who were greater than Yecheskel ben Buzi based on what they saw at the Yamsuf. These were the people who were going to Eretz Yisrael to settle the land. But all Moshe Rabbeinu, in that almost that blanket of anger at that moment, all he could see was that they were Morim. Right? Other cases of anger, perhaps not. It was justifiable. It wasn't personal. It wasn't consumed with anger. There might be cases where anger might be appropriate. But an anger that leads to a Shimu Nahamorim is an anger that's a reflection of the needs of self not being met. Now, once that is the case, perhaps a person can say, again, this is all just what I'm thinking out loud. So maybe at that point, once a leader or a parent or a spouse becomes ensconced in that perspective of self, and we now view our children or one's congregants or talmidim or their family in a certain type of way, they've lost the effectiveness to be a leader at that point. You ever go to a shul and a rav gets up to speak and you know that he's speaking out of love. He's speaking out of respect. He's speaking out of a sense of hakaras hatov. He's speaking out of a sense of gratitude towards the people in the shul. You ever hear a rav get up and you just tell that he's angry and he feels he's not being listened to and the balabaptim are listening to him and people are ignoring him? You ever hear that in the voice of a rav or a teacher or a leader? We all have. And we know that at that moment, A, it's coming from self, that he doesn't feel good about himself vis-a-vis the community. He feels that he's been rejected. He feels that he's been ignored. And you also know that the person simply cannot be effective if that is the prism through which he connects with the community or his family. And therefore, perhaps, that's exactly what the Rambam means to be saying. Now, this idea that there might be two different perspectives about anger, and I'll conclude with this, might be the reason or might be the opportunity to be miyashev what appears to be a steer in the Rambam. It's definitely a steer in the Rambam. The question is how one is miyashiv it. And that steer is the following. The Rambam speaks, both in Shmona Prakim and in Hilchos Deos, about the necessity for a middle path, right? A Shvil HaZahav, everything should be done in moderation, finding a moderate path for everything. And the Rambam says in Perek Aleph that a person always needs to have that derech mutza, that middle ground. He says, Ketzad, how is that? He said a person should not be noach lichos, shouldn't be, you know, easily angered. And he also shouldn't be like a base, like a dead person with no response. Rather, he should find a middle ground. So anger is something, according to the Rambam, that you need to find a spirit of moderation for. But then very famously in Perek Beis, the Rambam says that there are certain midos that you don't find moderation for. There's no derech memutza, but you have to be completely extreme in the abnegation or the rejection, the elimination of that mida. There are two things the Rambam says, of course. One is gaiva, needs to be extreme humility. And the second is anger. Anger has to be l'kotz ha'acher. It has to go to the other direction. So the Rambam in Perek Aleph says that anger is something also that requires moderation. The Rambam in Perek Beis says anger is something that has to be extreme in that lack of anger. So which one is it? The Rambam was the most brilliant of people. He knew what he was writing in Perek Aleph to Perek Beis. So I'm not sure there's a definitive answer, but what I thought to say perhaps is based on what we've just been speaking about, that there might be two different types of anger. There's an anger that sometimes that there might be a justifiable anger to be used in moderation. A person comes into a shul and they violate the shul in all sorts of different ways. A person makes a public Chilul Hashem, the idea of Knayim Pogimbo. A person walks into my house and they insult my wife and my children. That's an anger that comes either from an ideology or from a concept or from something that doesn't, in a way, violate my own sense of self. Right? That's not a violation of me. My ego needs, my expectations, my all of those things. So maybe if it's something that I can make a little space with, so maybe then there is room for some moderation of anger. And again, we know there's an idea that a Talmid Chacham has to be nokim v'noter k'nachash, needs to be able to take revenge. As I said before, k'nayim pogumbo, there might be situations where anger is justified. What is the anger that has to be eliminated that the Rambam speaks about in Perek Beis? That's an anger that is the avak avodah zarah. It's me obsessed with self, which just leads out to leaking out to everyone around me, which leads to a misperception or almost a fallacy of the world around me and the people around me, which leads to a shimuna hamorim of seeing Klal Yisrael or my children or my family in a certain type of way. That anger that's a reflection of self, that's an anger that needs to be eliminated altogether. And maybe that's what the Rambam is referring to there in Shmona Prakim. It's that anger, again, that's a reflection of self. Maybe that's what was happening with Moshe Rabbeinu. And maybe at that moment, there's a recognition there needed to be a change of leadership. Of course, for us, and with this I'll conclude, the response to anger always, always is faith and always is mindfulness. Person, when their self has been violated, either I or any person can go running into the situation, guns drawn, guns blazing, how dare you this? Or do you know you did this? Or you always do that? That's one response to anger. Or we can have a mindful approach. Breathing, meditation, allowing the feelings to pass, allowing those emotions, recognizing they're just feelings, they're not facts, as we always speak about when it comes to mindfulness. That's always the response. And I'm here to show all of us in our dealings with friends and family, children, co-workers, people in shul, Klal Yisrael, that we have the mindfulness of sort of the honesty of what's happening, that lack of obsession, so to speak, or absorption with self, never being led to a place of shimuna hamorim. And by doing so, by bringing faith into our lives, we are always connected to the best piece of ourselves and always connected to a Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. We should always continue to learn together, grow together, deal with our midos together, and use sometimes the challenges of leadership, of life, of parenthood as opportunities for continued growth. Thank you, everyone, for listening and cultivating.